I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. This week on The Storyline, we talk about a project called Trusting News that the newsroom is taking part in. It's a project to help newsrooms increase trust, transparency, and accessibility with the communities they serve. I talked to The Day's publisher, Gary Faruja, about what differentiates The Day from other news organizations. And I also talked to reporter Erica Moser and director of multimedia, Peter Wappi, about what the newsroom plans to do to tackle the issues of trust and transparency.
Let's start off by you telling us a little bit about your background in journalism, where you worked before, how you ended up at The Day, and why you ended up here at The Day.
Okay. I started off in the newsroom back in the 70s in suburban Detroit. Worked there for a number of years. Went to Washington, D.C. for a couple years, working at weekly newspapers. Then to suburban Houston, daily journalism in Fort Worth at the Star-Telegram. And then 18 years at the Philadelphia Inquirer. 12 of those years in the newsroom, then into a television experiment that was about as far removed from a success as you could get. And for the last few years, I moved over to the business side as the vice president for business development. And that got me on the radar of a headhunter. They were looking for a new publisher in New London. And fortunately for me, this is where I landed.
And what drew you to The Day beyond the opportunity to be a publisher?
So this is a very distinctive business model. There's only a handful of news organizations in the country that operate like The Day. What was fascinating about it was the market itself. It's a very dynamic market. Small, but outsized employers and outsized players. It's got the nuclear industry. It's got shipbuilding. It's got maritime industry. It's got mega casinos and gaming. And a very robust tourism market. And I was very impressed with the dynamism of the market. And it was reflected in the news organization at The Day. So that, coupled with the business model that The Day is, it is a split interest trust, which means that there is a for-profit part of the company, which produces the news, sells advertising, and sells subscriptions. And the other side of it is owned, the for-profit side is owned by the nonprofit Day Trust. And its sole reason for being is to receive the excess profits that the for-profit company generates and then distribute those profits to nonprofit organizations, marching band, new uniforms, right. Heroin clinics, spousal abuse centers, a whole array of performing arts and social service agencies.
Can you tell us, for some of our we take it for granted in the newsroom, I think, but for our listeners, how is that funding mechanism different from the majority of other news organizations, let's say the Current here in Connecticut or the Norwich Bulletin, the New York Times? Can you tell us how that's different from some of those other news organizations?
So what puts us in a minority of newspapers is that we are independently owned. There's a couple thousand newspapers in the United States. There's maybe 300, 400 that are independently owned, and those numbers are rapidly dwindling as corporate news organizations are buying up more and more independent newspapers. What further differentiates us is that we are owned by a trust. So We are not in the business of sending money to corporate headquarters.
Stockholders, right?
Stockholders. Yeah. We are not in the business of providing profits to hedge funds. We're not in the business of keeping fourth and fifth generations of family members in new yachts. We are in the business of serving the readers and the advertisers of our market. They're our shareholders. And that's what this this very distinctive ownership model provides for this community. And there are maybe five or six other news organizations in the country that follow this model, but the day was the first.
You mentioned briefly the day trust that gives money to a number of nonprofits in the area. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of organizations have received those grants over the last few years, and the kind of feedback that we've heard from the organizations, from the community, and the kind of impact that those grants have?
This year in January is when we do the distributions. And in January of 2017, we gave away $106,000. And those dollars went to, I think, 40 different organizations. We had requests in excess of $600,000 from about 300 organizations. So while we're very happy and grateful that we can do what we do, there is an awful lot of need in the area. It's great to be able to do that as a public service and as a good corporate citizen, but it also has instilled in the marketplace a very distinctive position for the day, because everybody has some touch with a social service that's been helped by the day. So in addition to it being a great human, decent thing to do, it's also a fabulous guerrilla marketing campaign. And it embeds the brand directly into the minds and the hearts of the people that we cover. This company operates at a very low profit margin, less than half of what most news organizations are operating. Really, less than a quarter of what it is. We operate at a very low profit margin, and the reason we do that is because we have a very large newsroom for the size market that we have. We are, even among independent newspapers in the country, our newsroom is almost twice as well staffed as any other comparable independent markets. That's because we don't have to send profits to a corporate. We don't have to send profits to a family member. We can invest in the community, and we choose to do that through our journalism. This is a small market. This is a small newspaper, 20,000, 22,000 circulation newspaper. We have the third largest newsroom in the state, and I would argue the best newsroom pound for pound in the marketplace. So we try to win people's trust by spending an inordinate amount of money on news coverage. And we're very, very proud of that. And all the awards that you folks win on an annual basis, we need a forklift to bring them back every year. That's part because we throw a lot of money into it, but it's also part of because we are deeply, deeply entrenched in the community.
So as you know, we at the day, the newsroom in particular, are taking part in an initiative called Trusting News, in which we are making an effort to be more transparent about our process in the newsroom, particularly the process of journalism, how we do what we do and why we do what we do. And in addition, also making sure that we are accessible to our readers and our community. So along those lines, what do you think as the publisher of the day we could do better to solidify the relationship that we've built with the community over the years, and in particular this issue of trust, the trust that we've been able to earn over the years in the community. What can the Day do better, or maybe what can newsrooms do better?
I think that the Day has always distinguished itself, and we can do a lot better in this, is by continuing to put context into the news. So we excel at who, what, where, and when, and every so often we hit it out of the park with how and why. We don't just tell people what's wrong or what's right about things. We tell them how we can make it better, or how it got to be wrong in the first place. So in addition to informing, we're actually helping to educate people and providing information for them to make better decisions in their lives. And I don't think a newsroom can do any better than that.
What does Leave Work Now mean to you? What does it imply?
It implies that wherever you're sitting listening to this, it is not as fun as what you could be doing.
Exactly. We're the harbingers of relaxation.
It's your job every day to go and do what other people would consider fun. So this podcast is sort of like going along with you.
You want to go with me the next time I attend a Yanni concert?
Now with Rick Costner. Find us on theday.com or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Why are you a journalist? Why are we doing journalism in 2017, Erica? But why are you? Why did you? I mean, you just came out of college. Why did you choose journalism?
It's kind of funny that I like to tell people that I kind of found my reasons for getting to journalism almost after I got into journalism, that back in high school, I admittedly was not as in tune with the news then, and people just had told me, oh, you're a good writer, and I thought, oh, I love writing, this is what I want to do, which is clearly only a fraction of what journalism is. But then along the way, just taking courses in college and being fortunate enough to do some internships and co-op in journalism, you know, I found so many other aspects I like, just talking to different people and being able to kind of have the privilege to hear their stories and share their stories, doing something new every day. And I think I also kind of developed an obsession with just learning as much as I could about whatever my beat was and just trying to know, you know, be as in touch with the facts and reality as possible. I know that's tough sometimes, but yeah. That's what
it's interesting you talk about learning, because I think that's one of the things that draws me towards journalism is I almost feel like I get paid to learn, whether it's learning about whatever topic it is that we're covering or learning about the person that we're profiling or interviewing, or in my case, often it's learning new technology. So I think that for me has been the thing that has kind of pulled me towards, has helped me stay in journalism. How about you?
So I think I have a similar story to Erica as far as how I came to journalism. I was really into visual arts and sports, and I wasn't especially great at either, but the intersection of them was something that I thought I found that I did pretty well. So I got into journalism thinking that like one day I would be a photographer at Sports Illustrated.
Right.
And I along the way found a lot of satisfaction just in telling the stories of everyday people and kind of putting out something that people respond to. That's something that I've always really enjoyed. And that's kind of what's kept me in it.
And so we're here to talk about this project, Trusting News, that we started less than a month ago, a couple of weeks ago. Peter, you kind of introduced the project to the newsroom. Can you give us a little bit of background on the project, what it is and what it entails?
So I found out about this project. Joy Mayer, who is she's a journalism professor, teacher, consultant, a lot of different things. She started this Trusting News project, and I heard her speaking about it at a seminar I was at. And it's all about, there's this implicit issue of trust that we are reporting facts and reporting stories, and we expect that our audience trusts us and believes what we're doing. At the same time, surveys have showed that there's an unprecedented low level of trust among the public for journalists. I've seen polls where journalism as an occupation is ranked lower than lawyer and used car salesman, and that's a real problem. Yeah. And so this Trusting News project is aimed at, one, I think helping people understand the news industry a little better, to understand what they're doing, and to better connect journalists with their audiences. I don't think that people necessarily understand the news business the way that we in the news business think they do or assume they do.
Right. I mean, it's like any profession, right? I think people that are involved in it take things for granted. For us, the fact that we take for things for granted is kind of amplified because so much of what we do is out, you know, forward facing. And as just regular people, you, Erica, and myself, have we encountered that kind of feedback, maybe from people that don't know that we're a journalist? Have you heard that from family members, friends, about the lack of trust?
I think that it's interesting among my friends and acquaintances, since they know me and they know why I got into journalism and have read what I do and hear kind of my side of why we do what we do and have that personal connection as well. For them, I'm not hearing the criticism from them so much. And, you know, ideologically, in my extended family, there is quite a variation there. So for some of them, it's almost a joke that some people use where I'll say something like, fake news, like they're just messing with me. And I think that's a testament to just how important it is to really be out in the community and meeting as many people as we can and having conversations and being involved, because I find that if I have those one-on-one conversations with people and speak to people face-to-face, that you do build a greater understanding there. And it's definitely, you know, a two-way street. I think, as Peter was saying, there's definitely a lot of things people don't understand about how kind of the basics of journalism work. You know, one of the things we've talked about is the separation between the editorial side and the newsroom, and how, you know, editorials mean having opinions, whereas if you're a reporter like I am, you try and make that as fair as you can. But at the same time, I think we also have a lot to learn from our readers, and I think it's important for anyone doing the Trusting News project here or elsewhere, or not doing the project, to really approach their audience with humility. I find it very frustrating when I see a lot of journalists on Twitter who are just saying a lot of mocking things a lot, or just being aggressive and getting in arguments on Twitter, and
dismissive,
people just defensive. And I never want to be defensive. And I think whatever we can do to say to people, you know, we're listening, we hear you, you know, what can we do better in the future? And then also, this is why we made this choice, and to reflect on anything, was it the right choice?
Well, part of the journalist's job has always been to decide what's important for people to know.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that people who have been in this business for a long time take that responsibility very seriously, but don't necessarily value the input of the audience as much as they should.
Right.
And that's been something that has always been important to me, that we are here in the acting in the best interests of our audience, but I think that we need to take more time and more care to listen to them and what they want, and not just say that we're the experts and right. we know what's best for you.
Some of our listeners might be aware that we've done some Q&As, right? Can you talk a little bit about that, Peter, about the Facebook Q&As that we've started?
So that's part of an effort just to be more accessible, that to let people know that we're listening and we want to know what they care about and what's important to them. And I mean, we certainly don't hide from our audience. Every reporter, every staff member has a bio page on our website with their email address, phone number, and Twitter handle at a minimum. And so we, of course, welcome people reaching out to us, but I think this is a little bit more of an effort to not just be like, all right, we're listening, but to say, we want to know what your questions are. We want to know what you think we could do better. So we've done 2 live Q&As on Facebook. We're going to do at least 3 more. And obviously, if people can't get to those Monday at noon, we can take questions and suggestions through our website before and after, through Facebook, before and after, via email, before and after as well. But yeah, that's just all about not just listening, but letting people know that we're listening and actively asking them what they want us to know or what can we explain to them.
And Erica, you took part in one of those. What did you think? What did you take away from that experience?
I thought it was very helpful. I was pleased with the response that we got on that and being able to interact with people. I think what's really tough is for a lot of the questions we get, a lot of it comes down to resources and kind of getting into the history of why we do things the way we do. I mean, you say, okay, well, back when the internet started, and then it ends up being a difficulty of just, you know, having fewer staff than we used to, and so that's difficult sometimes. And I think that's also why it is important then to hear about the priorities of our readers and our audience, because then if they're saying, oh, you have a limited staff, why are you doing this instead of this, for us to be able to consider, you know, what's affecting people the most, what do they care about the most. And kind of jumping off that, I think I'd love to hear from people about, you know, some of the questions they have, not necessarily just for us, but for us, for other people we're talking to, that if they're saying, whether it's, you know, an elected official or a business leader or someone that we talk to a lot, and they're saying, why don't you ask this person this, or I want to know about this, that, you know, if we're conveying that information, some we can kind of help people in some of those concerns they have.
And I think you touched on it a little bit, both of you. You know, and oftentimes our answer is not going to be, okay, we're going to do X, Y, or Z. But I think we've seen, I think in general, we see that when we have interactions with the readers and the community, but especially during these Q&As, that just responding to them has been beneficial for them. And I think they've responded in return, well, you know, even though the answer that we've given them may not meet their expectation.
Well, I mean, people want to see their community reflected in the newspaper, and what that means varies from person to person. And so people, they want to see what's important to them, and when they don't see that in the newspaper, they wonder why. And if we don't give people a platform to ask and make ourselves available to explain why, they may assume, well, you just don't think this town is important, or you think that this is not worthy of attention. And I think that if we can at least explain, like Erica said, it comes down to resources. It comes down to us prioritizing what's going to be of the most interest to the largest part of our audience. Right. And we have to, we think about these things all the time. We don't just decide to do something on a whim. We put thought into it. People aren't going to agree with everything. We're not going to make everybody happy. But if we can be more transparent and at least explain that decision-making process, I think that it's good for people to understand, at least.
And I think that it's important to communicate kind of both some of the similarities and differences between, you know, working at a local paper like The Day and when you're talking about national news. I mean, you have a lot of tons and tons of media just saturated and clustered in D.C. and New York. And, you know, it's interesting when the president talks about fake news, you know, that's going to make some people like journalism more and some people like journalism less based on their thoughts on him. But regardless, he's not, you know, talking about The Day.
He's so not, I think, about local news, right?
You know, it's such a different, I think local news, wherever you are, is an important part of the media ecosystem, because you're not getting, you know, this coverage elsewhere. And it also means that we approach journalism differently than on the national scale.
So that's part of the project, is becoming more accessible. and also transparent. And I think we've touched a little bit about that. How else are we hoping to express that to our readers?
So I think one of the other important things is to better explain who we are as a company and who we are as individuals. The Day is a very unique company among news organizations in the way that we're funded. I mean, we're not owned by a corporate chain. There's no shareholders that have to be paid an annual dividend. I think if you ask people who work here, that's something that attracted a lot of them to this. And I get the sense that people in the audience maybe aren't aware of that. So that's one thing I think we want to get out there. I think we want to better explain some of our internal policies. We have very strict rules about what we do and what we don't do,
right?
In terms of ethics and conflicts. And then also better showing who we are as individuals. I've been teaching a college journalism class for a little while, and I like to present the students with different ethical situations and ask them, here's this reporter. Do you trust that what they're doing is not influenced by advertising or sponsors? And that's raised a lot of questions for them. And it's funny to hear them say, oh, wow, maybe I'm not sure. I don't really trust that person. I know you would never do that, they say to me, because
they've met you.
They've met me, and they feel like they know me in person.
Right.
So I think if we can foster a little bit more of a relationship like that on a personal level with our audience, that to realize that we're not just a name on a byline, we are a person who is worthy of your trust as well.
And going off what Peter was saying, I think there's definitely policies across the board that I'd love to have us be more transparent about and put out there and say, this is our policy on comments, and this is our policy on anonymous sources, and this is our policy on accepting gifts. And I know the idea of gifts is kind of a big thing for me as a business reporter. I'm frequently writing articles about businesses, and I've turned down a lunch that was valued at $10 or $15. I've turned down free kickboxing lessons, and right, because it's just a conflict of interest. You don't want to appear at all like you're getting somehow paid for favorable coverage. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. So it's a little sad when you hear that people think that journalists are, getting paid for their stories or their sources or their accusations, when in reality it's, I know I'm hyper aware of it, and I know many other people are as well. So just to kind of be more transparent about how we make some of these decisions, especially if it is kind of a tricky situation or a little more nuanced.
And so we are going to expand on our website a page where we're hoping to have a lot, if not all, of these policies kind of spelled out, so that we could direct people to it. And also, we're hoping to expand our bios, our staff bios. So we're going to be doing that shortly, where we're going to have reporters write bios for other journalists, and then maybe get some more personalized photos and some video profiles, probably. What else? What else do we have in the works?
I think one of the big things for me is that, this is our participation in this project is in a finite window with certain parameters. And my bigger hope is that by doing a whole bunch of small individual things, that maybe we push a little bit of cultural shift within our newsroom and within our company to just do things better, be more responsive to our audience, and overall just be more open and transparent about what we do, and be. I don't think that we're necessarily not transparent. If somebody wants to know about what we do, we're not hiding it from them. We're just not actively trying to get it out there.
Right. We take it for granted. Again, I think to that point, I think we're all accessible. We're all approachable. I know that our reporters, when they're at meetings, they want people to approach them and talk to them and ask questions. But like you said, it's about pushing that information out to people.
I do think we've talked a bit about getting a little bit more involved in the comments section. And I know that's a tricky situation because obviously we're not going to get into an argument with anyone. But I do think there are some areas where, you know, maybe you can just clarify something if someone interpreted something differently than what was intended in the story, just to clarify it or just to add in a detail or explain again why we do what we do. I mean, and so that's definitely a line to walk there, and that's we do have a lot of loyal commenters and repeat right. commenters, so we're only hitting kind of a small fraction there, but that's something to consider.
So in general, to be more proactive, mm-hmm. yeah, I agree. The commenting, I think, is something that we talk about all the time, and you know we can only do so much with the technology. Our technology is a little bit outdated, but. I think we could do more. I think a lot of us agree that we could do more about jumping in there, maybe directing some of the conversation or clarifying things.
We've had a lot of conversations internally about what we want out of it, but we haven't spent right. a lot of time asking the people who participate
right.
what they want, or the people who choose not to participate
why they
don't, and what we could do to
pull them in
pull them in and make that a more desirable experience.
And sometimes just in general, whether it's in the story or in the comments or elsewhere, clarifying why we've decided to cover a certain story, why we've decided it's newsworthy, or why, you know, if you're looking into a ton of data or an extensive study, why you think one part is especially interesting to focus on. And I say that just because with some issues, you know, people will say like, oh, the day is trying to divide us. And for us to explain, you know, we don't want to divide anyone, but if there are divisions that are factually existing in the world, it is our duty to report on them.
Right.
And so that's just one example of explaining why we may cover something.
So people can find out more about the Trusting News Project by going to theday.com/trustingnews. And our next Q&A is on Monday.
Monday the 4th at noon. And it'll be myself and Sean Elliott, our director of photography, talking about photojournalism, you know, issues of ethics in photography, and anything ranging to tips for the amateur right. photographer, how they can make their photos better.
If you want to contact Peter or Carlos or me or anyone else at the day, just that our email format is firstinitial.lastname@theday.com.
So E.Moser, C.Virgen, and P.Wopi.
Huoppi
@theday.com.